This is the Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad Network.
Don't be a pussy. Laser my fucking tits.
And welcome to the Girls on the Boys, a podcast dedicated to analyzing the Amazon series The Boys and the spicy world of soups and stereotypes. I'm Jen Adams.
And I'm Rachel Reeves.
And today we are talking about Season 3, Episode 5, The Return of Almond Joy, also known as a title that is way too long for me to remember. Let's see if I can find it. Hold on. The Last Time to Look on This World of Lies.
That is very dramatic. I'm assuming that's probably tied to the comics in some way because I don't know where that comes from.
I know. I'm like, what are we talking about? Yeah. So, like, listeners, if you are a comic head and you know stuff about that, let us know. Also, if you're a comic head and you know stuff about that, like, reach out to us because I'm curious, you know? But we're getting into, like, we're turning the corner on Season 3. We're getting to the meat of it. We've got 4 episodes to go before we are caught up, not including Gen V, which is a whole nother thing. But, like, the shit is going down. It's getting real. I'm very excited. And this is a doozy of an episode. I'm very, very excited. So I was worried last week. I asked if you had looked at the screenshots of anything, because the one on my screen is of Frenchie and Kimiko in a dance pose. And
yes,
so,
like, no, I try really hard. Like, the second it's over and, like, that little thing pops up, it's like, you know, it's like cancel. Like, I don't look at IMDb. I try not to scroll down. I've been doing my darndest to avoid any and all spoilers. So I did not see that. So that was also a very pleasant surprise.
Yes, that was so sweet. Well, you've only got 4 more. I've only got 4 more episodes to worry about spoiling things accidentally. And yeah, I don't know what's going to happen after the end of this season, but
you're going to venture into the unknown.
I know. I feel like I should do a song and dance number to get there too. But you know what? Before we get there, a lot of shit's going to go down in the next 4 episodes. But in this episode too, there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah.
Some interesting relationship shit, some new dreamboats on the scene, some celebrity cameos that I can't wait to talk about. let's go to our first category, Huey, Cutie, and the News. And Rachel, do we have news?
We have news. Oh, the angels are smiling down upon us. We have a date for Season 4. Yay. Finally, it's happening. They have released the date. No idea what was holding it up, but it's official. Season 4 will, in fact, return on June 13th, 2024. And pretty great timing for us, which I know that we've talked about. So this is awesome because, we'll be right about wrapping up Season 3 and maybe can squeeze in some Gen V in there. And it'll all just be great. Like, thank you. Thank you, Amazon. Appreciate that consideration. And Prime has said that Season 4 will premiere with a 3-episode drop. So we're going to get 3 episodes right away and then followed by a new episode each week. With the season finale dropping on July 18th.
Interesting.
And all in all, 8 episodes to look forward to. So that's what we're working with.
Sweet. And that's been pretty typical of all of the seasons. So,
yep.
You know, and this show can pack a whole bunch of shit into one episode. So I'm very excited. And yes, gentle listeners, we have done some off mic talking about, like, how we're going to do this and what the schedule is going to look like. We'll figure it out. I think we are going to try to squeeze in Gen V before because it's set in between seasons 3 and 4. Yeah. I don't know if we'll do full episodes, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how the dates line up.
I know.
We've got to work with.
I also, there was a tweet the other day about Patrick Bateman. And of course, I think of our new Patrick Bateman as Patrick Schwarzenegger because I think they were in talks. So anyways, I was just Googling Patrick Schwarzenegger GIFs and I saw a lot of dreamy ones from Gen V. So I think we're going to have to cover it because I love, you know, I just love a good evil blonde man. So
yeah. Well, and I've heard it's actually good. And so like if reviews were coming back from people I actually trust and follow and know that it was terrible, it might be a different story.
Right.
But I've heard nothing but positive things from some people. So yeah, if we can do it, I'm all for it.
Yes. And, you know, I don't know if we've had any kind of confirmation about this, but would not surprise me to see parts of this show up in the season four.
Yeah.
In the next season too. So it would be good for us to be in the know. Mm-hmm. You know, we say having not read any of the comics, but that's a whole other thing.
We'll do our best to be in the know about something.
Exactly. we're picking our media and we're staying in that lane. So yes, that is very, very exciting. And we will definitely let you know when we figure out what we're going to do. Before that, let's talk about this episode and our next category, the name of the game. And as I alluded before, this episode is called, hold on, The Last Time to Look Upon This World of Lies. I had to take a big breath because it's too many words. I do feel bad if it's some like really poignant, like, I don't know, comic book name. But you know what? Again, that's not our medium. Mm-hmm. The description here, did you know chimpanzees are an endangered species largely because of human activity? But you can help by supporting construction costs for Crimson Countess's chimp country. That is some nice alliteration. This beautiful refuge for chimpanzees will feature a banana plantation, 4 daily stunt shows, and a petting zoo. And when you donate, you'll be entered to win a private video chat with Crimson Countess. Donate today.
Wonder what kind of private video chat.
Yes, an exclusive one, I would say.
Yes.
Also, for the record, Crimson Countess Chimp Country, technically not 4 alliteration words because we have a CR blend and a CH blend. Sorry, that is my my brain would kick me later. One person in the world would care about that.
Like, actually.
Well, actually, didn't you know? Yeah. But yeah, that's a fun one. And very excited to talk about Crimson Countess for the last time, maybe. I know.
Today's episode is directed, well, today's episode that we're talking about for the boys, directed by Nelson Cragg. He is a producer and director, mainly also a cinematographer, and he's a member of the American Society of Cinematographers. And I think we can really see that on the screen on this episode. I think this episode looks great and has some really interesting, like, visual character moments for sure. And yeah, some of my favorite things, actually, which we'll talk about as we go, just actually things that's like, oh, I have not seen this before. And I thought that that was really great. So yeah, he did an incredible job. And we're going to see him again very soon because he also directed season 3, episode 6. The Herogasm episode. So he will be returning. And, you know, the fact that that episode is as notorious as it is, I think, speaks volumes to his talent. This guy has a great resume. He's directed and worked on Them, Ratched.
Yeah, we just say it fast.
I was like, wait, like I'm trying to say it now. I'm like, wait, actually, how do I say that? Pose. He has worked on Gen V, so he'll be there. American Horror Story, Roanoke, Homeland, Breaking Bad. Clearly, somebody who knows what he is doing.
Nice. And I will say, you know, I've been talking about Herogasm since I think probably episode 1. It's my favorite episode of the entire series. Like, I am beyond excited. And it is notorious, but it's also like, because it is a boys episode, like, it's just really well put together too.
Yeah.
And I love how they're batching these episodes. You know, I think it's like there's an arc in this season that I'm really, really digging, like visually, narratively, and it's it's just looking really good, you know?
It always just feels so thoughtful too, you know, mm-hmm. especially I feel like when you, I think you see this more in longer, you know, TV shows, shows that have like 18, 22 episodes, but sometimes it feels like there's no continuity or it feels like they were just scrambling to write them as they went. And it's like, where was mm-hmm. this going? This doesn't make much sense. Or, but I think that this is really, I mean, clearly adapting kind of that prestige model where it's like, no, 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 we planned this whole thing out. We've got the pacing. Let's rearrange these episodes, you know, or whatever to make it feel the best. And yeah, I'm just so impressed with the thoughtfulness mm-hmm. that has gone into this multi-million-dollar production.
Yes, so, exactly.
That's nice, I guess. I appreciate that.
Well, let's talk about some of those episodes in our next category, Sup with the Soups. And this is the section where we're going to recap what's happening and remind us when we last left our soups, what they were up to. Homelander was making Vought great again by taking out Mr. Edgar and killing Supersonic, effectively putting the kibosh on Starlight's plans to unionize. Butcher was cozying up to little Nina despite Frenchie's strong objections and using Kimiko as a dildo-fighting assassin, which was very cool. Also, she fought with dildos. She did not fight life-size dildos. As I was writing that, I was like, there might be some confusion there. Although, you know, if you're just dropping in on this this show now, you know, we got a whole lot of episodes before this. All right. But, yeah, so Frenchie and Kimiko over Butcher's bullshit, starting mm-hmm. to make plans to leave the boys. But not Huey. He is feeling emasculated and all in on the reckless new plan and steals a vial of Temp V from Butcher's bag. While Starlight is faking being in love with Homelander, the boys took a trip to Russia where they met a sweet but deadly hamster and discovered that the soup-killing weapon is Soldier Boy, who is still alive. He blasts Kimiko with a torso laser and she's not healing like she used to. MM notes ominously that the team is effectively dead as they rush Kimiko to the hospital. So a little bit of a cliffhanger that we ended on.
Yeah.
And again, I think there are some soups in these categories where I'm not exactly sure what side to put them on.
Yeah, there's definitely some, you know, TBDs next to some of these people. And mm-hmm. I love that.
Me too.
Just like knowing. It's like, ooh, which way are you going to go? Because you have potential to go either way.
Yes. I don't always love it for organizational purposes of the outline. But all that to say, we may blend or weave through our Bad Boys and Spice Girls category. Which tends to happen as we near the end point or actually season six usually is a pretty big episode.
So, yeah.
You know, as we're kind of making our way up the mount to Muhammad, as a Homelander would call himself, we may have a little overlap here. But let's talk about our Bad Boys and let's kind of batch this. Let's talk about the stuff that's happening in Vought. Let's start there and then we can talk about the outside stuff because for the most part, I think our Vought stuff is Bad Boys territory, I think.
Yeah, Vought is going through some shit, which understandable. They've just lost Edgar, new mm-hmm. CEO. Homelander is, you know, in charge. I don't know. Yes. So it seems like there's a lot of reorganization, as they might say, right, happening mm-hmm. in Vought. And it's not looking good. If I was working there, I would definitely be nervous about my job.
It's like when a certain someone took over a certain social media platform and you're like, it's time to start looking for other sources of income.
Maybe stick to cars.
Exactly. And that guy's not even going to laser your face. He's probably going to try to laser your face and he might even think he can laser your face, but mm-hmm. not like Homelander. But let's start with Ashley, because she's actually who we kind of start with on the Vought side. She is the new CEO of Vought International, a position she has totally earned and is totally going to be doing in actuality, not just as a figurehead. She's gotten some flowers from Lindsey Graham, which I mm-hmm. thought was a fun little drop. And it's just, she is just totally just chugging all the bullshit. But terrified. And there's a moment. Yeah. I love this scene with Starlight and Ashley. How are you feeling about Ashley in this episode?
I mean, it's like, why are you there, Ashley? Why are you still working there? But at the same time, like, she keeps getting rewarded. And it's not for her work. It's not for her as a person. It's not because they see something in her. It's literally just because she's, like, alive and has survived and is able to put up with this environment. And she just happens to be there. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so now she's CEO. So I part of me can't blame her because it's like, well, try to take advantage of this position, milk it while you can, cash them checks, and then bail. Mm-hmm. But also, like, she is really, I feel like we're starting to see her lose herself a little bit more than we have in the past. It did seem like there was a sliver of hope for Ashley, right? Mm-hmm. And we see that for a second with Starlight, but just a second. It's like she doesn't allow herself to feel that way. And she reels it back in and puts on the mask and tells her, like, I'm the CEO, make an appointment next time. Yeah. And I want better for you, Ashley.
You're so close.
You deserve more.
Yes. And we deserve more from you too. Like, you could make a really powerful partner working behind the scenes. And yeah, it's just kind of that, like, what we've been talking about strength and vulnerability, because the braver thing to do is to connect with Starlight in this moment. And she lets her guard down and she says, I don't have powers, which I think is a really revealing, like, kind of statement to tell us where her mind's at. And she's right. Like, Homelander could, like, fry her at any second, and did fry her last boss, you know? So it's not like it hasn't happened. She just killed Supersonic. I think that's when Starlight really gets to her, because I do think she liked Alex a lot. And she's now part of this cover-up, which they're essentially calling him a drug addict, which is just
awful.
Horrendous, yeah. But yeah, it's like she... I love the kind of different levels of fear we have here, because she's showing her fear, but then I think she gets too scared and she puts, like you said, she puts the mask back on and she's like, no, I can't let my guard down for a second, because I know he's going to know. And, like, she's right. Like, Maeve, he smells Butcher on Maeve. Like, if he's got that kind of perception, like, what does he know about her, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's just like a performative position that she's in. It's a performative power. And I'm not sure, like, what the appeal is for there, unless they're just, like, paying her really well, I guess. But I worry for our girl Ashley, because, for a few episodes there, it seemed like she really was kind of, like, feeling herself and, you know, literally not pulling out her hair. But I don't know where she's going. Down a dark road, I would imagine.
I know. It is always a delight to see her, though, because I think she, you know, we see a lot of comedy from her, especially in the last episode, the brain getting fucked by stupid. That was just really funny. But I think to see her in this really vulnerable moment, I think just kind of shows you the strength of this performance, too. Yeah. And she also, I think, can easily get drowned out by all of the other, like, gigantic performances on this show. Speaking of gigantic, I just made my screen, like, super big. Hold on just a second. I don't know why it's so big. All right, let's see if it's normal. It's normal sized. Yay. Okay. A little reverse termite moment maybe there. Okay. And where are – oh, remember Termite?
I know. That was Termite. Short-lived character, but made an impact.
He sure did make an impact, yeah. Well, so speaking of Ashley, let's talk about her boss. And I think Ashley is able to tell herself that she has power, even though she knows she doesn't, because her job now is just managing Homelander's emotions, essentially, which I can't think of anything more stressful. And I think this is an interesting episode for Homelander, too, because, you know, he gets asked about some kind of earnings call thing. And I really think that was a genuine question. Like, oh, you're taking 100%. Over for Mr. Edgar. Like, this is something he does. Yeah. And he has no fucking clue what he's doing, you know? Yeah. And I think he knows it.
It's a completely reasonable question. Like, she's asking him an actual question related to what they do, what he should be doing. Like, hey, how do you, where's your stance on this? Like, how do you want to handle this?
Yeah. And how can I better kiss your ass, sir?
Yeah. Completely reasonable question. And he has no idea what she's talking about. It's she literally could have been speaking another language and he just, like, it did not compute. But he is not willing to admit that. And I think he sees it. It feels like he saw it as an insult. Like, oh, are you trying to, like, you know, call me out or, like, I don't know, just make me look like an idiot? And she's like, no. Because she immediately, like, backs down. This woman, like, immediately is like, oh, my God. No, like, I was just, like, in her head, just like, I was just asking you a question.
This is what we do in board meetings. Have you never been in a fucking board meeting, Homelander? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that shows his insecurity here. I think this is a moment where he realizes, oh, maybe I am in over my head. And also, maybe I don't want to do this job. Like, it's he's like the dog that caught the car, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's here. What's he going to do with it? You know,
well, he has to have Edgar's words like in the back of his mind, too, because this is exactly what Edgar was saying. Like, you have no idea what you're going to do. And now there's not going to be anybody to cover for you. Like, go for it. Like, you are going to tell on yourself so quickly. So go ahead. You want to run things? Run things. Exactly. Because he knew that he would have no idea about these kind of things and would have no idea how to actually make intelligent decisions about these kind of things. So this is just like the smallest taste of that. But then he just immediately gets rid of her. Like, goodbye.
Yeah. And let's hop to somebody else real quick who also has no clue what he's fucking doing and also destroying a whole bunch of probably important jobs. There's more to say about Homelander, but I think we see the Deep doing this also, who is now dream bigging all over the crime analytics board with his sprinkle cupcakes, which did make me want a cupcake, I will admit.
Yeah.
But and I just love this line drop of, like, for someone with no practical experience. Like, what a fucking insult.
Well, and, like, this woman, she even mentions, like, I've been doing this, you know, it's been a great 13 years. Like, she's clearly, like, highly experienced at her job. But because she's not, like, out in the field actually fighting, like, she doesn't know how to analyze crime and track. Like, it's like they're kind of two different things. And
as if he doesn't show up to crimes because she told him where to go and who the criminals are.
Like, yeah, exactly.
What do you think you're going to do?
Oh, so why? I understand. It's just funny because it's like, it's a TV show, but there's like little things. It's like, why are they allowing his wife to be there? Mm-hmm. Like, she is following him around. Obviously, we see, like, she is telling him what to say. She is prepping him. She is coaching him every single step of the way. But I just don't understand, like, why Vought is just letting, I guess they're letting her be there because she is doing these things. So it's like, all right, you can be Deep's handler, like, continue.
Yeah.
But also, I just am so surprised. I just didn't expect that from this character, I guess. And we still know so little about her. I don't even know her nickname. I can't remember her name.
I think it's Cassandra. But okay, like, I'm not sure. Right? And I've watched the show 3 times all the way through. Yeah.
But she's just there constantly, just telling him what to do and what to say. And it's working, you know?
Yeah. Homelander, well, it's working for him.
Yeah. Well, it's working for him. Like, Homelander is stacking the decks, like, just stalking Vought with yes people. And he knows that that's what the Deep is. And, you know, he got rid of Maureen, like, later lady. And so he's just going to fill it with people that he knows that he can control and that are going to tow the Homelander company line, right? And that's exactly what Deep's doing. And that's why, I guess, apparently, he fires everybody except 2 people.
Yeah, exactly. Who, like, apparently just aren't on Twitter or something, you know?
Yeah, just haven't said something bad about Homelander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is just kind of shows you where, like, the state of the company is, you know? Like, if this is who's making all of these decisions, Ashley, I feel like, is competent. Like, I think she could manage a company, but not with Homelander terrifying her all the time, you know? Like, who's at the wheel? And I think part of the reason they let Cassandra in is, one, they know Deep is completely incompetent without her. And 2, they don't care. Like,
yeah,
he's not, they're not putting Deep in charge of anything they think is important, you know? I think they look at it all as a show, you know, mm-hmm. and we'll see the person who used to do that show, who used to be in charge of managing the show later, and to see what like a mess it was. And I think it just is still a mess. It just looks a lot more official, you know?
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that this episode, I mean, we have gotten a lot of Homelander. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's, you know, one of the main characters, the main character, I think, for this show. But it did feel like, and it was kind of nice that we got a little less of Homelander, mm-hmm. I think, in this episode. Like, we definitely get more of our other characters. And he kind of, clearly, he's very important and huge, you know, hugely important in the story as we go on, but less of him on screen, which was kind of nice.
Yeah. Like, to the point where I almost feel like we should maybe save the other thing to talk about him with to when we get to another character.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much of the story in this episode is his story and how much he's playing a part in other people's stories, which is really unusual. And that's because we got a new sheriff in town, which I also think we might should save for when we talk about the boys.
Yeah.
Let's talk about A-Train.
Yeah. Rough episode for A-Train. Oh. Like as a person.
I know. It's just like it just breaks your heart. It's like I think he really wants to be a good person regardless of the bad stuff he does.
Yes.
And I really want him to be a good person, and he just keeps stepping on the rakes, and like it just blows up in his face in the worst possible way in this episode. He finally gets his meeting with Blue Hawk. He's trying to have like I think he's doing pretty good at talking to Blue Hawk, you know. He's saying what he needs to say. He's not being like overly threatening. But he seems to be trying to have a reasonable conversation behind closed doors, which is, I think, what he really wants. Of course, Ashley just springs it on him because she doesn't actually care. She just wants to check this off her list. And she knows Homelander doesn't care. So mm-hmm. this is not something that she should put too much effort in. But then he springs a surprise meeting on his brother. And it's a little bit of I don't know, hurt people kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
this is how we do these kinds of things, I guess. We just show up. And I also wonder if he was afraid Nathan would say no if he asked him about this.
It also felt like to me, and we've seen this multiple times over, but I really got the feeling it's like A-Train is so disconnected, I think, in a lot of ways from reality. Like, he has been famous. He has been a superhero for a long enough time that while he thinks that he's still connected to what's really going on in the community, it's like, well, clearly you're not. And that's kind of what his brother is like doing. Like, what, you brought him here? And, mm-hmm. you know, A-Train's like, yeah, I brought him here to apologize. He's like, yeah, but you brought him with cameras. Mm-hmm. it feels like A-Train genuinely doesn't see the issue there, because mm-hmm. that's the world he lives in. Well, of course the cameras are there. Like, of course mm-hmm. there's this. You know, it's just, that's just how things are done, but doesn't seem to see the issue in that or to understand why that might be, like, not the best approach or received the best way, which we do see because, yeah, Blue Hawk just gives the fakest. I mean, him and Deep together just – I actually think that Deep's was a little bit more convincing just because mm-hmm. he was so – stupid about it, and so like, but Blue Hawk knew that his like didn't he literally just did not care at all.
Oh yeah. He essentially just pulled up his notes app, you know, and just
the basics, like hitting the bullet points of what he had to say. Okay, you do this, you do this, you say this. Okay, I'm giving you money. Okay, later. Mm-hmm. And thought that would be acceptable, which
it would have been if that Antifa hadn't have shown up.
Yeah.
Just drives, it's like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about this, because then, you know, he feels threatened because he is having to face consequences for his actions. And mm-hmm. because he is a superhero, he lashes out. He injures a whole bunch of people, including Nathan, who looks to be paralyzed from the waist down. And what's interesting is A-Train can't stop him. Like, He has right? the ability, like he's got the his superpower should be able to stop this, but he can't because he's been so kind of laid low by his just life, you know, his life choices.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what happens next because, yeah, he couldn't defend him. He couldn't do anything. And I genuinely don't think he expected anything like this to happen. But now he's seeing firsthand, and it's not just, you know, it's not just people on TV. It's not just, you know, people on a report from the crime analytics department. It's his brother. And mm-hmm. he's seeing Blue Hawk, like, doing exactly what everybody's been telling him he's doing. But to see it in person, I think... Like, I do appreciate how Jesse T. Usher, the actor, like, it really feels like, holy shit, like, I feel like this character had no grasp of what was actually happening till that moment, and mm-hmm. it all of a sudden kind of all hits him. But then by that point, it's too late. His brother, yeah, they say he'll likely never walk again. Yeah. And it's not A-Train's fault, but... It's a situation that possibly could have been avoided if he had just been a little bit more self-aware or had done mm-hmm. a little bit more research or had just talked to his brother before arranging this surprise apology.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, fault or not, intentions good. Like, this happened because of A-Train's actions. And
yeah.
And I agree. I think Jesse T. Usher is just fantastic in this role in this episode. I love that they don't discard this character, that they keep mm-hmm. pushing him through all of this stuff. I will say one of my favorite pieces of the second half of this season is seeing where this goes without any spoilers or anything. It's really interesting. And I think, like, when he lost Popclaw, I think he still had Nathan. He still had Nathan's mm-hmm. family. Mm-hmm. And he still had his community to come back to now, too. And now it's like he doesn't have anything. Because, I mean, if they weren't mad at him or they weren't going to give him shit for wearing that suit to their house, yeah. like, what are they going to do now when he shows up? Like, does he even have a family anymore? And I think he could tell himself he didn't need Popclaw. But I don't think he can tell himself he, one, doesn't need Nathan and his family, and two, that he has anybody else, because he knows nobody at Vought gives a fuck about him. And yeah. he knows that Starlight he's on Starlight's shit list now, too. So,
yeah. A-Train is his own worst enemy.
Yes.
And just continually, I just feel bad for the dude, because it's like, he just does these ups and downs, and it's like, why are you making these decisions?
I know.
And as soon as we start to feel like he's getting back on track a little bit, he derails yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And this time he took out his brother in the process.
Oh, and it just breaks your heart too. Well, you know, I think there are a couple more people to mention that are on our bad boys list. For this episode, I tended to just put, like, clear villains and superheroes on the mm-hmm. bad boys list. But I think this episode, it's a lot more complicated than that. Let's go ahead and move into the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be some overlap, some mix. And we still got some stuff to talk about with Homelander, too. I did not. Yeah. I will never forget about this hot blonde man. So don't you worry about that. But let's start with MM, because I believe he is the first boy we see him watching really upsetting videos of Soldier Boy getting, like, tortured by the Russians. Yeah.
And that's something that I guess I was like, oh, I guess I didn't think about that. Like, thinking about, yeah, of course people would be experimenting on soups to see, mm-hmm. like, how can we push this? Like, what can they, you know, and obviously all the soups are different in some way, but oh, yeah, of course other governments would be experimenting on soups. Like, I don't know why that didn't register to me. And it was just really upsetting. And I think it was also, you know, MM has his issues with Soldier Boy, but also, like, I didn't get the impression he was enjoying watching this or relishing him watching this. It was just like, oh, God, this cannot be good.
Right. Well, and, you know, when you make a dangerous man unstable, that doesn't make anybody safer, you know, it doesn't do anything good. And, like, it's, I don't want to spoil anything, and this isn't really a spoiler. We're going to hear descriptions of this tape later, But like they're doing things like stabbing his cornea with a knife, shooting a machine gun in his mouth.
Yeah.
And it just, it or like trying to cut into his neck. And just to think about, like, yes, he's a superhero, but like they are, he is helpless and they are trying to like destroy his body. And that's got to be just terrifying.
Oh, and just like, I mean, and I don't know, different levels of pain. It's like, I'm sure he feels something or like, just horrifying. And just using him as a test subject versus like a human being, even if he's a superhuman being. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. It did feel like MM was processing that, carrying that, but mm-hmm. still clearly has his own issues with Soldier Boy and is still, you know, not letting it go, because I think he realizes too, oh, this guy's even more of a threat now, mm-hmm. as we will soon see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know why MM
control himself.
Yeah, and he's still so determined though, as we see. Like, you know, he wants to go after him, especially once they know where he is. And it is MM who leads us to him, because mm-hmm. even like Butcher says, like, he's like, I would assume you have a lead. Mm-hmm. Like, I just assume. And of course, yes, he does.
Mm-hmm. Yep, leads him straight there. And yeah, like as he's kind of seeing, it's not a flashback from Soldier Boy, but I think we see Soldier Boy experiencing this as a flashback later. And it's interesting to see MM have similar flashbacks, because he sees like, this is the most I think we've seen of the carnage of this moment where his family died. And then we just see Soldier Boy with this like shit eating grin, with that like, what was that rap song he was saying, with that, God, what's the
The
solid
rapture,
gold?
The Blondies? Yeah.
Yeah. Where he's just kind of grinning and being mm-hmm. a dick, you know? And then to see what Soldier Boy actually is now, like we see three different Soldier Boys in this episode, but to MM, he will always be the shit eating grin monster who killed his entire family. And I think it destabilizes MM a lot. Like we start to see his twitches, and then he immediately kind of ditches his daughter, which understandable, but it's interesting to see him kind of off his guard too, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know, but it felt like it was almost like a PTSD kind of thing mm-hmm. where it's like he couldn't control it and didn't necessarily expect this. But once confronted with the situation, like just can't control these images, these thoughts, these feelings. And, mm-hmm. you know, we know he has OCD, but it did feel like at least how, I mean, I don't have PTSD, but like how it seems depicted mm-hmm. and just kind of like that reaction where he had to get out of there. And it was so so sad to see his daughter just be like, did I do something wrong? And he's like, no, but this is something that's been, you know, he's been carrying for forever. And now mm-hmm. it's finally, I don't know, it's that tricky situation where obviously MM has been wanting this in some way to like mm-hmm. finish what his dad started. But then when it's actually happening, that's got to just feel so intense. And I think that they did a really good job of conveying that and making it like helping us, the audience, feel that weight and just mm-hmm. how kind of just intense and complex the emotions that he would have in this moment really are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I do have both PTSD and OCD, and there I feel it, like it's really accurate, you know, like there's the like my hand will do that a lot. Listeners, you can't see me, but it'll just like tremble in like a claw. It reminds me of like the liar liar claw, you know. But I think he's in, you know, OCD, I think as a trauma response, a lot of times can be like, you are destabilized by these flashbacks, these triggers that you can't control. Your mind brings you back to that moment. And then your head has these little intrusive, helpful thoughts. That's like, if you just organize everything, if you just stay super clean, that's going to fix it. That's going to solve the problem. And I think it's a really interesting depiction of both of those things, because, you know, the stereotypical depiction of OCD is clean and organized. And I think mm-hmm. here we see the reason why and that there is more to it than just I like things neat, or, you know, I love this depiction of it. I love MM in this episode. And he does not fall apart either.
Yeah.
Like, he's still very much MM. He is fucking pissed at Butcher. And I love this line. He says, the whole point of what we do is that no one should have this kind of power. And you see him tempted to take this temp V, like, but he's like, nope, my dad wouldn't do it. And if you don't draw the line somewhere, you never know where you stand. And then he calls Annie, you know?
Yeah, the Butcher and MM thing I thought was really fascinating because, honestly, I don't think either of them were wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like different approaches to like how you would handle this kind of situation, you know, whereas Butcher's like, oh, you can't beat them, join them. And yeah, and Butcher's or MM is kind of more like, oh, when they go low, we go high kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, just because they're doing that doesn't mean like we have to do it on their level. But, Butcher's point is like, well, what are you going to do? Like, like, what are you possibly going to do? And I don't think MM has a plan necessarily. Mm-mm. His plan is like, okay, where is he? I can track him. I know what he's doing. But it doesn't seem like MM actually knows what he's going to do when he meets Soldier Boy. Like, I'm not exactly sure. So I don't necessarily think either of them is wrong. But yeah, he takes a very strong stance on not taking the V, which I think is in line with this character. But it does feel like a real decisive, like, definitive moment in their friendship. Like, okay, well, that's fine, you're gonna do this, but that, like, that's it, man. Like, there's no coming back from this.
I can't be with you if this is what you're gonna do, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as sad as it feels when that happens, like, that might be necessary for them. Like, they may have just gone as far as they can together, at least on this, because I think you need both approaches for this situation too, you know? Like, you do need stronger power. And Butcher knows how triggered he is by Soldier Boy. Like, we see, like, he doesn't have a plan because he can't think straight to find a plan, you know, because he's so destabilized by this.
Yeah, so we see Butcher drug him when they're at the Countess's compound, which gave me, like, I just watched Miami Vice, the Michael Mann version of Miami Vice, not that long ago, and I was like, oh, this feels very, like, this is, like, a very similar setting. It's like a boys' version of that of that setting there. But we see Butcher drug him, and I guess I'm just wondering, it's like, I mean, I see where Butcher's coming from, because it's like, what would MM... It would just put him in a dangerous situation. Like, it's not like anything would get solved, I guess. Like, what would he say? Just say something to Soldier Boy? Just be like, you know, my name is MM. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Like, what is he gonna, like what is he gonna say to Soldier Boy? Would that be enough? But ultimately, I mean, we've seen that, you know, Soldier Boy is a little unstable at the moment and they don't actually know him quite yet. So it's like, maybe now is not the time for that conversation, MM. Let's get a lay of the land before he just kills you, because
exactly.
He's just like, I don't have time for this.
Well, and I think that's what Butcher is afraid of, is that MM would not be able to stop himself from attacking Soldier Boy. Soldier Boy kills him. And then that's a line that Butcher can't cross. Like, he cannot work with Soldier Boy now that he killed MM, because I do think, like, you see the real regret on his face when he does have to give him fucking roofies, and it's just such a shitty thing to do too, and Butcher knows it. But I don't know if either of them are wrong. I think you're right. There's a whole lot more to talk about with this conversation, but let's jump to Frenchie and Kimiko, because their story, it's like, it could lift out, but I'm so glad that it doesn't, because I love it.
Yeah.
And there's this really great pan of A-Train in the hospital, and then directly above him is Frenchie and Kimiko. He's so sweet to her. He's just, like, by her side. You know, little Nina's onto him, and now he's back in her just, like, circle. But before that, they're watching a Judy Garland movie. Is that Meet Me in St. Louis? I think
It is Girl Crazy.
I will say I love musicals, but I tend to like more of the modern musicals. Nobody at me. I did know that was Judy Garland, but I didn't know what, but tell me how you were feeling when you were watching this scene, because there's a lot of shit that happens that is very exciting.
I mean, I loved it, and like I loved seeing him there, and then like them both kind of realizing at the same kind of moment, like figuring out that she does not have her powers anymore, mm-hmm. and just kind of what that means. And obviously she is thrilled. And mm-hmm. I think he's, you know, allowing himself to be happy too, because he knows what that means to her and like what having these powers, like what it's done to her mentally and emotionally. And so I think that they both are like, okay, well, what does this mean? And she's ecstatic. This is like what she's always wanted. So it makes sense that they would have a big musical number, because it's like... this is like a dream, right? This is a dream mm-hmm. come true for her. Also, fun trivia about this. They were saying that this musical number was shot in one day, but that Tomer Capone and Karen Fukuhara rehearsed it 6 times by themselves and then a couple more times with the dancers. And in the musical number, Frenchie is wearing non-slip dance shoes, not Frenchie's usual boots. So if you're like an eagle eye, you can see that he's because he was slipping all over the place. Nice. But I mean, I loved it. And it was such a cute little thing. And I guess also I was going to ask you, I was a little unsure about... Did she actually say something, or was that just it was like a little vague on whether or not she actually did say anything?
Yeah. Like, when does the fantasy start, you know?
Yeah. Because we see her like say, oh, wait, what does she say?
She just kind of makes a sound. She's like, and then she says, I got rhythm.
That's what it is. Yeah. I got rhythm. And it's like, wait, did she actually say that? Or was that part of the musical dream sequence? I'm not sure. And but
I don't know. I think maybe somewhere in between. Like, yeah. I could imagine her making a sound. But also, we saw that in the first episode of season 3, too, yeah. where she was imagining singing along. So I think the question for me is, does Frenchie know that this is something that is coming close? Because I think I interpret this as her working her way towards speaking again and singing again. And I just don't know how close Frenchie knows that she is, or how Frenchie understands that she's kind of working through this. Because I can't imagine like explaining that to someone like through signs too. Even if she has the words to articulate it, but...
And we see him
kiss. Yeah, the song and dance number. She kisses him. She kisses him.
She kisses. And this is the first.
Like a good kiss.
Yeah. And like we know that their relationship, that there's a lot of love there, you know, in one way or in one form or another. But it's been very unclear. Like, are they just like, are they dating? Are they just, you know, really good friends? Like, what is this? And so this did seem like. This very much felt like a first kiss. Mm-hmm. And I love that Frenchie doesn't know how to process it, but also didn't seem like upset. Like we see these little tiny like smiles, you know, mm-hmm. but it was just kind of something maybe he would just never knew really if it was going to happen and wasn't pushing the issue. And then when she kind of confirmed maybe his feelings, that's how it felt. I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you how you felt about his reaction to this.
Well, I think it does feel a little bit like a punch in the gut when he gets up to go. I'm like, no, no, no. Tell her it's okay at least. But I think like the way I interpret it, I think we do know that he's happy about it because of, like you said, those little smiles, which are so fucking cute.
Yeah.
Kudos to Tomer Capone for not overselling that too, you know? Mm-hmm. I think... I've always kind of assumed that Frenchie wanted to be with Kimiko, but would not let himself think of her that way until she clearly made her own move. And so I wonder if he's just put such a firm boundary up that he can't quite realize that it might be coming down now, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, little Nina shows up at the wrong moment. Also.
I know. Just brutal. It makes me so sad because, I really do think that he just needed a second because he values this relationship with Kimiko so much. Like, it means so much to him. Mm-hmm. I think he just needed, he's like, okay, I just need a second.
Mm-hmm.
to make sure I take this next step right. Because, mm-hmm. like, clearly he's had other relationships and we've seen what those are. And it just, you know, with Cherie and that kind of stuff. And I think he just wanted, like, okay, if I'm going to, like, do this, there's a lot of things to consider because we see what happens with Cherie. And, like, and what that has in turn done to him, the situation, like, their relationship is now putting him in this situation with little Nina. And so he just needed a second. But, yeah, he doesn't come back because he's kidnapped, I guess, by little Nina. And yeah, she's just like ghosted. She just thinks that he just left. Like, that's so sad.
I know. Like, worst possible time, you know? I also want to say too, like, I love watching this musical number. It's so sweet. It's so well put together. It doesn't overstay its welcome too, you know, like it's not too long. And I also want to give a huge shout out to Tomer Capone, because I think you can tell he is not a song and dance man, you know, like, he does a great job. But, like, you know, I imagine some of those knee bends, flexed feet are because maybe he had a hard time pointing his toes straight. And he's like, which is, you know, I'm sure he did not audition for this role thinking one day he was going to be a part of a musical number, you know. And it's just so sweet. I'm so glad that they got to do this together. And that it wasn't like some random, like him just sitting and watching her dance. I just love the show so much, you know, for these little moments, you know?
Yeah.
Well, let's go back. We had a moment of lightness, and I did like cheer out loud with that kiss because it's a good kiss too. It's not just like a peck or like, oh, maybe we bumped into each other. Like,
oh, no, it's good. And it's just been building and just, like, in the background, you know, just simmering. And it's like, yay, finally.
I know. Well, let's talk about another hookup we see, which is Butcher and Maeve. There's a lot to say about Butcher and a lot to say about Maeve, but let's start with the two of them together. Did you see this coming?
No, not on my bingo card. Did not expect this to happen. But then, like, as it was happening, I was like, oh, I'm here for it. Like, I actually think there is a world where they would make a good couple. But I also think there's a world where they could be really toxic for each other. Because, like, as we see, you know, Butcher, you know, offers her a drink. And she's like, no, I've been sober for 4 months. And he's like, oh, I was sober for a year. And then they start drinking together.
And it just cuts to her, like, with messy hair, just shit face.
Yeah, and like, so it's like, okay, yeah, there is a world where they are not good for each other. They would just end up, like, enabling each other. But they are, I think, more alike than they realize. And honestly, more alike than I kind of realized. But once you see them interacting together, it's like, oh, this makes total sense.
Yeah.
Like, they both tend to isolate themselves. They both have suffered a lot of loss. They've both, you know, lost themselves to this world of soups and stuff, and so I think that I like that moment, but did not see it coming.
No, and I mean, it's, I like watching it too. It's very hot. I love just like how she just like pushes his head down with her like soup powers too.
Yeah,
it's so funny. But yeah, they also both like have like less than zero fucks left to give too. Like they are both ready to go down fighting Homelander, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they're maybe the only two people in the world that can really understand that too. And it's interesting to see her kind of confront him with the like, oh, you hate all of us, right? Like, I'm trying to help you. We want the same thing.
Right.
And still you think there's something wrong with me. And when he says like, yeah, y'all should all be gotten rid of, you kind of feel like she agrees with him too, you know?
Yeah. I think she's got so much self-loathing and like just a lot of issues that she has for very valid reasons. It's not like she, you know, hasn't been through a lot. But yeah, I think she's like, yeah, I see that, because she sees especially the soups that she has been surrounded with. I have to imagine that there is a world, or there are soups that are working for, you know, they're not going to all be that awful. You know, like there's some soups out there who, I don't know, are using their powers to like grow crops or something.
Right. Like, yeah. Like a grassroots soup organization, you know?
Yeah.
They're probably in California somewhere.
Yes. But they're not, you know, famous and in these like celebrity kind of positions that she's in. And he just kind of if you surround yourself with those kind of people, that becomes your world, and it's just completely eaten her alive, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about the other conversation she has with John, which I thought was interesting. He's like, how dare you, John, me too. So we're talking about Homelander. And it's such a revelation, too, because he's saying kind of some of the stuff that we've said in earlier episodes. Like, I was the only one that could understand you. And I think now she has Butcher, which just shows you again how alike Butcher and Homelander are, too. It's like these three people have just been through so much shit. They all three hate themselves so much. It's just palpable, you know, but I feel like he's really trying to connect with her, because I feel like he realizes now he is alone, you know.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing him talk about their relationship and just, you know, him talking about how, like, oh, I loved you in my own way.
Right. As much as, like, I can love anyone is what I think he's really saying without wanting, like, being able to say that, you know.
And I actually kind of believe him. Like, that's always been an area of ambiguity with these characters, like, especially, you know, in the light of Homelight, right? Just, like, how was that completely performative? Was that completely staged? Was there anything real to that? And on her side, it sounds like no, never. That she also was in kind of a starlight situation, but somehow there was part of Homelander that did really care for her in some ways. And I think we've seen that, because there's been plenty of times where they have been in situations where they are directly at odds, and he has not necessarily reacted in the same way with her that he would have with a starlight, with, you know, a deep or whatever. Like, he definitely, Maeve is in a different category. For whatever reason. And so it's like, well, yeah, I guess in his own way, he does care about, or did care about her. It's just not necessarily, like, still great, but, or is that exactly real love? No, but it's in his own way, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and, like, think about who else we've heard call him John, too. I think it was just Old Man Vought. You know, I think who he essentially sees as a father. I think that's the only person we've ever heard call him John. And she's doing it in such a manipulative way, too. But it, like, and it reminds me of Ashley in a lot of ways. And Madeline, like, I think she knew how to work him, and she learned how to make him think that she loved him and make him think that he cared for her, you know, and she's ripping the Band-Aid off of that now. She says, I always hated you, which, you know, has got to cut, you know?
Yeah. I also don't think it's working on him anymore. Like, I think that Homelander now is, you know, miles away from the Homelander we first met in season one. I think he's much more cynical and much more, I don't know, his eyes have just been open to a lot of things, you know, for better or for worse. But I think that he's not going to fall for that in the same way. Because he's very paranoid, and he's very, like, just against everybody. So he's always going to think the worst now. And that's also, unfortunately, applying to Maeve. Whereas maybe before he would have believed her, but I don't think he does anymore.
Well, and he's not wrong, too, you know?
Yeah, like, that's true.
That it freaks me out when he just knows she's been with Butcher. He can just smell it, you know? And, like, they are, the entire purpose of anything outside of Homelander is trying to kill Homelander, too. And he has that line where, like, if they are actually coming to get you, it's not paranoia, you know. But I also think, I don't know how much he knows the difference, because he is extremely paranoid right now.
Yeah. And he's not wrong. And, yeah, so he just, like, kidnaps her. Was it Black Noir? Is that who, like, is behind her? That, like, I don't know.
I'm not sure we ever get official confirmation, and I can't remember exactly. But who else could, you know?
Yeah, who else would actually have the strength or do that?
And who else would do it, too?
Yeah, exactly. So. Okay. I was like, wait a minute. Was that Black? We got him for just a second.
Right. Yeah, and we're jumping all around this episode, but that's why Starlight goes into Ashley's office, because Maeve is gone now. And she is like, we don't even know if she's still alive. The story is that she's so brave. She's in rehab, which, again, just makes me want to punch Ashley. Punch Ashley and give her a hug, because I do love Ashley. But, so we'll see what happens with Maeve.
Yeah.
I know. Let's talk about the mirror image of Maeve and Homelander. I think it's so interesting, this, and there's so much to say about Soldier Boy and Crimson Countess, but this conversation they have too of, you know, she's saying, I always hated you. We all always hated you. And I think before we really get to those two characters, I think the connection there for me is like, when someone not only has the weight of the patriarchy behind them, like, I am an alpha male and I get whatever I want. Also, I'm the most powerful man in the world. Like, love is not real for those people, because there is no unconditional love, because you could just kill them, you know, and they know it, and they know you will. And it's just interesting to see that cycle, that this is not the first Homelander we've seen. It's not the first of this, like, contractual relationship.
And he's just oblivious. Like, similar to Homelander, I think it's like just completely oblivious to, wait, like, this, how they hated, like, she hated him. And he's like, I thought you were going to come for me. I loved you.
Right. Exactly.
Like, if you really knew her, if you really loved her, if this relationship was real, you probably would have seen hints of that, enough that you wouldn't have expected her to be coming for you all these years.
Exactly. Or, like, allowed yourself to see. And it reminds me of Barbie. You know, it's like, this is how the patriarchy hurts men too. And now, I, for the record, they are not the major victims of this situation. Like, they have created these problems for themselves. But, like, this is the downside of patriarchy. Patriarchy doesn't work for anybody in the long run. Everybody gets hurt by it. And we see these two men who don't know how to love. They don't know how to experience love, because they've never had it, because they haven't had to. They've had all the privilege in the world. And when you have anything you want at your fingertips, nothing is real. You know, you don't have to work for anything. Let's talk about Soldier Boy. I said we see three different versions. This is the first time I think we've seen, like, Soldier Boy proper, I would say. Modern Soldier Boy proper. So we see him first wandering around Russia. He somehow makes his way back to New York, which I'm not going to quibble about, because...
Yeah, where'd he get the money?
I know. I'm like,
an ID, a passport. Right.
Maybe he just, like, got, like, put into the hull of a plane or something. Yeah. I don't know. He's Jensen Ackles. He can do whatever the fuck he wants, I will say. And then he hears this this Russian music, and we've mentioned PTSD, and I think this is a really interesting PTSD reaction. He starts having these flashbacks to all this torture, and blows up a fucking building, killing 19 people, which, King's Dominion, did you?
I know, I definitely thought that.
19.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, we'll never be the same again after Losers Club, will we?
Oh, no. It's always like, ha-ha, that was intentional. And it's like, well, I don't know about that.
But I know. Yeah. They're like, nah, they don't care.
Yeah, I'm curious about this, like, new power of his. It does make me think that he's still, like, he doesn't have full control over it. Probably because, like, he sounds like he's been locked up for a long time, and it seems like he's not fully, like... He doesn't have a full grasp on how to use this new power. Because from what I understand, this exploding thing, that is not traditional old school Soldier Boy, correct?
That's not, from what I understand, no. Really what we see from Soldier Boy is just really, really strong and kind of invincible, I think, from old Soldier Boy. There's not ever really any mention of any kind of, like, Homelander type powers, you know, and it's very Captain America coded, which I'm not an expert on Captain America. I do like Chris Evans in Sunshine, but that's about the extent of my Captain America knowledge. But yeah, this is new. And I think it's, I wonder, I wonder how much opportunity he had to ever use this, you know, because it does seem like he can control it when he kills Crimson Countess.
Right.
Or that he is at least intentionally letting himself lose control for that purpose, you know. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, on the street, I don't think that was intentional at all. I think he couldn't stop it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like a chain reaction, like a nuclear reaction almost, yeah. Where it's like, oh, once you hit a certain point, like this is, there's no stopping it. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of seems like that's what happened. And yeah, it's pretty, I like how they show just kind of the massive scale of his power, because it was like, whoa, that's like, it's not, you know, we've seen Homelander do some pretty serious damage and we've seen some other supes do some pretty serious damage, but this does seem to be on a different level, I think.
Yeah. It's not a nuclear explosion, you know.
Yeah, it's like, a bomb. I mean, it's like a huge bomb, like, going off.
Exactly. Yeah, whereas Homelander is much more, like, quick and precise but smaller, you know. And mm-hmm. it would be interesting to kind of line their powers up against each other, you know, to see which one might be the more dangerous because, you know, Homelander can instantly shoot his powers out. Mm-hmm. Soldier Boy takes a little while, and it does just kind of feel like where they are, because I feel like Soldier Boy is not really in control of himself right now either. Yeah. You know, this conversation with Crimson Countess, we've already talked about the I hate you part, but like, I think it makes, tell me how you're feeling about Soldier Boy, like modern Soldier Boy in this scene, aside from the fact that I just fucking love Jensen Ackles. Like, he can do no wrong, just forever. I love him.
Yeah, it does seem like he's processing. He's a little confused. I think he knows that, like, some time has gone by. He's observing, and mm-hmm. I think, but just by, you know, his movements, it does, you know, he went to Crimson Countess, and I do think him going there was, like, a positive, authentic, like, he did care about her and thought, like, okay, I need to go mm-hmm. and see what's up with her. But then, like, very quickly realizes mm-hmm. you did this. And that, and he, I think, and he even, like, seems to give her a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, because he's like, well, how much did they pay you? And, like, maybe that would be like, okay, mm-hmm. I would understand. And then she's like, they paid me nothing.
Yeah. The payment was to get rid of you, you know. Which,
yeah.
And not even kill you, like sign you up. Like, she knew he was still alive, too. She knew they weren't going to kill him, which is, it breaks your heart for him. And that's, like, I put him on the bad boys list just because he's a soup, you know, and we don't know. And I don't ever want to spoil anything, you know. But, like, I don't know where I put him for this episode, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he knows where to put him. It does seem mm-hmm. like he's genuinely, like, a little just, I don't know what's going on right now. And I'm not exactly mm-hmm. sure what to do, because then, you know, he does meet Butcher. He does, and he doesn't mm-hmm. kill him. Like, where it leaves off on a very, like, I don't know. We also don't know what's happening, but it does seem like they're okay. Like, he's not just immediately killing them. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm not sure where he is, but he kills Crimson Countess. Like, she's donezo.
Yes.
So,
oh yeah, she's, you know, fried up. Like, what happened to Madeline's head happens to her entire body and her chair and her trailer.
Yes. So, I mean, there is, like, he is the weapon, like, as, you know, which is also, yeah. I love that, you know, the weapon is not a weapon. The weapon is a person, you know, that kind of thing, which we've seen in, you know, how many other movies, how many other, like, TV shows and that kind of thing, which I love.
I do too. But also, like, he took Kimiko's powers too. So, like, he can take powers.
Yeah. Even if he doesn't, like, fully kill you, it would be enough to, so that somebody else could, or something else could, it would set you back enough that you would have a chance. And I think that's, like, such an interesting thing that I did not see it coming. I did not see that coming. And I think it's very cool.
And to be honest, I would prefer that for Homelander than for Homelander to die, you know, like, with another person that shall not be named, and just, like, real people in life. Like, it's not so much that I want them to go to jail or that I want them to have to pay a certain amount of money. It's that I want them to understand how they make other people feel. Mm-hmm. And I think if Homelander could experience just for a day not having powers, I think that would be the punishment that I need. I mean, I need it to happen for longer than a day. I need it to happen for the rest of his life. But like, that's what I want from him. I don't want him to die. I want him to know what he's done to everybody else. Let's talk about Crimson Countess. She's got a whole bunch of ape friends, primate friends, and she has a very special celebrity cameo friend. It's Mr. Seth Rogen.
Yeah, this is how you do cameos. Like, shows take note. Like, we get not one, but two incredible cameos, and I loved it. Also, yeah, Crimson Countess name drops, Dunstan checks in, and Outbreak.
Yes.
I thought that was so funny.
Just classic Aprils, you know, they're great. I love the way he points his finger on the lotion thing. Like, it's just such a, like, perfect little bit of physical comedy. And so Seth Rogen is a producer on the show. I think he's like involved in the development. And I saw some interview a while ago where they like he wasn't originally going to play this cameo, but either they like couldn't find anybody to take this role or they like were hesitant to even really ask anybody because of what it is. I mean, you're essentially like jerking off to somebody dying.
Yeah.
And so he just did it himself. He's like, well, you know, it'll be funny. And it's just perfect. It is just chef's kiss.
It's so funny. And I also like, it's so, I love that, you know, this is what she's been. And, you know, I'm not, I don't want to say reduced to because it's her choice and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like clearly. But yeah, that she's been supplementing.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It's like she's been supplementing her income. On Soup Porn Platinum having and like I love that like it's like 20 minutes into their session and she's just been talking about her you know the apes and like her
about her this, chimp side hustle
and then finally he's like that's great but you know the meter's running can we move this along
what about those ass beads which those are big
she's a superhero, you know?
That's true. She is a superhero, yes. And again, just one of the reasons I love this show, because you have these really deep moments. You have this, like, we've talked about, like, two different mental illnesses in this episode. And, like what is the nature of true love? And then we have this moment with ass beads and... and Seth Rogen just, like... jerking it and being super weird and funny and
with Starlight's lotion.
Perfect. Oh, I didn't even notice. Oh my gosh. Gosh, I love this show so much. Well, speaking of Starlight, we haven't really talked too much about Starlight. Let's talk about Starlight and Huey because there's a lot of shit that goes down. This is the other relationship that I don't know if I want to say they break up, but. They're
crossroads.
Definitely, yeah, they are at crossroads. And how are you feeling about the two of them? I think we could probably talk about them as a pair, too.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Starlight is processing some feelings about, what happened to Supersonic and kind of figuring out what her plan is with Homelander. I think she, not that she didn't know that there was a danger that people that she cared about could be hurt, but I think Supersonic was a big, like people I love, superheroes that I care about are getting killed. And I think that she really starts to fear for Huey's safety, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. And she's not really, you know, Maeve has disappeared. She's not getting any help from Ashley. And so, she's not sure what to do. But then Huey is going this other direction and... Mm-hmm. I think she's just not necessarily sure that's the right direction either, but I can't blame Huey, you know? Like, it's he's once again dabbling in the temp V, in the dark arts. Like, I get why he does it because I do think that that makes sense. And if you have this capability, like, why would you not, if you're going to put yourself in this situation, why not put yourself in this situation with, you know, the least amount of getting hurt.
Yeah.
But it does make me sad, like, when he talked about, like, because MM's telling him, like, you don't do that, don't do that. And he's like, well, who do you want? Like, the weak, you know, scaredy cat Huey? Or, like, the strong, like, confident, handling his shit Huey?
Like, I thought we were past that. You know?
Yeah, and I just thought the choice of words was really interesting, because it's like, we've seen Huey be strong, we've seen him confident, we've seen him handling his shit, and none of that had anything to do with V, and it just makes me sad that, like, Huey still can't see that in this moment. Like, he mm-hmm. doesn't mention teleporting, he doesn't mention healing powers, like, he's not actually mentioning the powers that the V gives him. Mm-hmm. He's just talking about how it's making him feel.
Yeah.
It's just like a little ego bump for him more than the actual powers.
Yeah, it's like having a safety net too, you know, which I think when we talk about what real courage is, mm-hmm. it's being able to do all of these brave things without that backup, you know. And again, I don't blame him. And also, this comes at a moment where, like, I think if they were just dealing with this as a regular couple when the entire world wasn't exploding, like, I think, like, Starlight could be a little more patient and a little more understanding, because I'm sure she would see where he's coming from. I don't think he's doing anything or saying anything wrong, but she has been saying, like, I'm afraid for my life. I feel like I'm going to die, like, essentially asking for help. And I think he's like, I can help you. It's part, I want to feel like a man. I want to feel strong. I don't want to feel emasculated. I feel like that's a little too oversimplified for what actually is going on in his head. But it's also like, I love you and I want to protect you. And I know that you're in danger too, you know? And, and he just killed Supersonic. Like, he can kill Supes and he will.
Yeah.
And so I just think he's like, this is something I can do to feel strong. And It like, to watch him look at it in the trunk, you know, while Butcher and MM are having this conversation. And it's almost like it's shades of A-Train, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you could see this becoming an addiction for him. But yeah, I love that they're honest with each other, though. Like, you know, and he makes that joke kind of about, like, you know, do I get points for honesty? And she kind of blows it off. But I think he should. Like, he's telling her a lot of things he knows she is not going to like, and that probably aren't super smart either. And he's still telling her, you know, and I think that they have come a long way, even though it feels like a couple of steps backwards in other ways, you know?
Yeah, I do think, like, past Huey would have not told her about Soldier Boy and what they learned.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't really have another option because she's standing right there and Soldier Boy is there. But I do think he would have kept some of that stuff a secret. I wanted to ask you, because I'm not sure that I agree with how this ends off with Starlight and Huey, because basically Butcher and, you know, Soldier Boy are walking off in one direction, and they're like, come on, Huey, let's go. And Starlight's telling him not to, and he leaves. Like, he goes with them. And I'm not sure I see why Starlight would not want to explore Soldier Boy as an option, as a weapon. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I get that she's upset with Huey and, like, you know, understands that, you know, Butcher can be a little reckless and is not always the best, but just seems like kind of the rational, logical decision to make in this moment. Like, why not explore this?
Yeah, well, and it's also like, it's one I always think about it as a Frasier moment, as if, like, if two people would just have an honest conversation, half the plot would disappear. Like, I don't think it's quite that far, but, like, if Huey says, hey, he looks like he took away Kimiko's powers, maybe he can take away Homelander's powers, like, I do think she would be on board. I think part of that is plot mechanics, like maneuvering chess pieces. But I also think this is a moment where I think she is more like Butcher than she wants to admit to. Like, as Butcher is like, Supes suck, I can't, like, all Supes deserve to die, I don't want to be around any of them. I think she kind of is on a little bit of a moral high horse with this kind of stuff. And she's like, I can't be a part of this plot because it's wrong. And I think, and I think in a way, like, she and MM are in alignment on a lot of this. It's like, we have to be able to know who we are and know where we are, because we see what happens when you start crossing those lines, then the lines just disappear, you know?
Yeah.
But it like, yeah, it is that moment of like, no, this is what we've been looking for. Like, you told me to find a weapon that I could use to kill Homelander, and yeah. I did.
Yeah.
And now I'm in trouble for that? Why?
Yeah. It does feel like Starlight is a little bit lost, kind of, about mm-hmm. what to do. It seems like she is terrified for very valid reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, don't want to, like, take that away from her, but it does feel like she's making a lot of decisions out of fear, and it's just kind of like sad to see her in this way, because I felt like she was entering this season so strong mm-hmm. and so, like, you know, not blindly hopeful. You know, it's not like she had stars in her eyes. but it does seem like her hope for what she could accomplish as, you know, the co-captain of the Seven has just been, like, decimated. Like, mm-hmm. I do feel like her hope and her spirit is kind of at a very low point right now.
Yeah. Well, when we see the hoodie of despair, you know, like, she's yeah. out of her uniform.
Yeah.
She's wearing her sad street clothes, her empowered street clothes, I guess I could also say. Yeah, it is an interesting moment for her and for the two of them too. And I feel like their relationship is a little stronger than just like, oh, we broke up, you know?
Yeah, totally.
We've seen them go through separations before, and I really do think they love each other. And she just lost Alex. I think she is now very aware of how much she needs him too. Like, I don't think she's walking away forever, but I think I don't want to say anything. Sorry. I was going to say something that which is not even a really big deal, but yeah, she's essentially left to kind of pick up the pieces of MM just kind of laying on the ground.
So, I know. Yeah. Poor MM.
I know. Well, let's talk about the one person we haven't. We've kind of talked about him in conjunction with other people. How are you feeling about Butcher in this episode?
I have to be honest. This is some of Butcher's best dialogue in the series uh-huh. so far. Like, yeah. Butcher is so good in this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, whoever was writing him, because I know a lot of times there's multiple writers and some writers take specific characters or whatever. I don't know how it's handled, but he's so good in this episode and just delivering such a incredible mix of classic Butcher, just bravado, ridiculous, disgusting lines, mm-hmm. but also some really insightful, thoughtful moments of, like, reflection. Mm-hmm. I just loved Butcher in this episode because he's still, like, very sassy, very opinionated, but it comes off a little less egotistical, a little less of an asshole. Like, it's just, it's kind of like he's laid all the pieces out and it's like, okay, this is what has to happen and this is what I'm going to do. And not everybody's going to like it, but I really do believe this is the right course of action. Mm-hmm. And he moves confidently in that and knows that he's going to lose some friends along the way. But yeah,
maybe it's worth it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's just a lot of weight to him and what he's saying mm-hmm. in this episode. So, and I can see where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily agree with him 100% and can't say, like, I would react the same way. But it's like, yeah, I can – I think that there's value in what he's doing, and it's not as reckless as we've seen him in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, I think he comes the closest to anybody in the show I've ever heard – explain why people shouldn't have this kind of power. He says, V just made me more me, mm-hmm. which is just like the heart. I was like, have they been listening to our episodes? Which I know they haven't. This came out before that. But, and he's saying all it does is just amp up what's already in you. And I think he says this to Maeve too, two characters that like, hate themselves and like mm-hmm. hate Maeve hates having a stronger version of herself. Like, she can't stand it. And I think because it's not that having a superpower makes you inherently bad. You're not evil because you have powers, because we do have someone like Starlight and we have Maeve, who is using her powers for good right now. But it's just that people are human. And when you make them superhuman, you amplify all of their flaws too. And that's really dangerous. And it's interesting to look at his reaction to the V compared to Huey's reaction, because like, it is making him more of himself. And I was thinking, like, my original note was, oh, he's getting more temp V, he's loving it. And but he doesn't, he hates it because he doesn't want to be more of himself.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Huey is finding, like you said, it's a confidence boost. And I think Huey is pretty happy with who he is, even though he does feel insecure. And Huey, I think, has a lot of strength inside him. And he is still kind of on the positive side of having that strength. And that's why I think he really enjoys having this power. It's giving him, it's letting him become the me he wants to be for a purpose that he really believes in. Or I think, and a protective thing, where I think Butcher is really focused on destruction right now. And maybe that's kind of where they're at odds. But he also says this really interesting thing. He was like, somebody like Gunpowder, that would have taken months of work. And I just like popped this in my veins and then I lasered him with my eyes and now he's dead, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He knows it's the most efficient course of action, even if it kind of, it just goes against everything that he's been preaching for the last 2.5 seasons, right? He knows that this is their best hope. It's his best hope, even if he vehemently hates Soup so much and is just going to like, he's just accepted that in a different way, I think. And I do think that he's able to do that because he's been able to step back a little bit and just kind of acknowledge and see his own very strong, passionate feelings towards Supes. And kind of once he accepts that, he's able to like be like, I just got to take this because, yeah, otherwise it would be months of work. Yeah. And I don't want to do this anymore. And I just kind of want to move forward and let's just do this. And this is how we do it. Even if he hates every second of it, he knows, I think, that that's actually the best, most efficient way to go about it.
Yeah. And like, that's the maybe a better way to protect the people he actually cares about than this self-righteous like crusade that it feel like he's been on. Like, he feels like the truest version of himself, because I feel like he's gotten rid of all of those, like that armor that he had, like his like witty stuff. He still has that, he still feels like Butcher, but it feels, he just feels like he's in a much more vulnerable place right now. I think he is very aware that he can be an asshole. And I think whereas before he would use that as armor, he now is like really kind of hating it, but also knowing that's who he is and that's how he works. And that's his place on the team too, you know? And it's interesting. I think what I love so much about this show and the way this kind of season arc is going is that like, you really need everything. You need, like you said, like you need the when they go low, we go high, and you need somebody willing to get in the gutter. Like, there's not a right or wrong. It's, you have to know who you are and you know what your strength is and like offer that strength in the way you can, you know?
Yeah.
And so we've got everybody coming kind of on, like they're all in disarray right now, but you also kind of get the feeling that they're going to start hitting from their own angles and that maybe that's what we need, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's everyone. I don't think there's... I've got one more character I want to talk about, but in Shock and Awe. So let's go to good and evil first. So a couple of interesting themes in this episode. There's definitely kind of like a breaking up is hard to do kind of vibe going on.
Yeah, no, totally. And like, I kind of thought, like I kept thinking about like, just toxic relationships are dangerous decisions. And we, you know, how MM's talking about lines in the sand. And it just seems like there's a lot of, yeah, a lot of big decisions, a lot of big choices being made that I know that we're going to feel those ripples throughout the rest of the season. But it does seem like all sorts of characters are going, you know, just crossroads all over, and everybody's going different directions, and how those roads are gonna lead back to each other, I have no idea, or if they will. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like this is the episode where a lot of that is happening.
Yeah. A lot of interesting bedfellows too, you know.
Yeah.
Because we got like Starlight and like MM called Starlight, which like I don't know if that's ever happened before. It was a very interesting choice for him to do that, you know.
Well, he knows that like she can get to Huey. Like he saw Huey like want the V, and you know Butcher didn't tell him no. Mm-hmm. Let him make his own decision. But I think that if MM knew that if anybody had a chance of getting through to Huey, or you know, just making him think about it again, it was Starlight. And of course, she would also be helpful because she's got superpowers.
Yeah, and it also reminds me of that road trip episode we had where they kind of had that bonding moment. Like, I think they kind of genuinely like each other, and I think they are very much alike in their kind of, I say moral high ground, that feels a little mean, but just in their convictions, I think is mm-hmm. more what I want to say. And so, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing the two of them together down the road, maybe in season four.
Yeah.
I don't say anything else about season three. And then, yeah, you also have Failing Upwards, which I think is exactly right and hilarious. And just the story of Deep's life, but also, Homelander's doing it too, you know?
Oh, yeah. And Ashley, and I just, you know, I just think it's funny. We just see these characters who are all clearly not good at their jobs continue to succeed and move up at Vought.
Right. Well, they're not doing anything important. You know, there's nobody's lives in their hands. So who cares if they don't know what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big Patrick Bateman vibe, you know, to Homelander, which is interesting because, you know, Patrick Bateman of American Psycho, if you're not familiar, has been compared to another person we compare Homelander to all the time. Mm-hmm. And we also have Maeve calling him a malignant narcissist in this episode. And him not really arguing with her, you know,
because he's like, I know you are, but what am I?
Exactly. Well, let's talk about another very interesting character. In my notes, I just put Paul fucking Reiser. I had forgotten about this. When he opened the door, it was, I think, the last person I was expecting. Uh-huh. And you just talked about Paul Reiser, didn't you?
I know. It's so funny. Yeah, because, yeah, we were just covering Aliens, which, of course, he plays Burke, the sleazy guy in that. And so it's just, yeah, he's back in my life, and it's beautiful, and I love it.
And I love all of these pictures with everyone, you know, it's like, oh, that probably just is a picture with him.
Exactly. You know? That's why I was like, I bet these are just actual. He was like, oh, do you have some pictures of you, some celebrities? And he's like, oh, yeah, of course. Who do you want?
It's so fun. And it's just so nice to see Paul Reiser. I was a fan of Mad About You for a while. I haven't seen it in a while, but just I like him. I also watched My Two Dads. Did you ever watch that show?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. I loved it. I had a huge crush on Greg Evigan, which was the artsy dad of the in the My Two Dads, you know, thruple. I guess it's not a thruple if one of them is their daughter.
No, that's not how that works.
Right? No, that's not what a thruple is. No. In their little family. but it's just fun. I like his, like, patter, you know, I like his speech patterns. He's just so funny when he's talking about like how to spell LeBrock, like the L and the B are big, the rest of them are little. I was like,
oh, it's so funny. And yeah, just him like dropping these references where, you know, Huey's much younger and it just has clear, like, no idea who he's talking about. And just, oh, God.
Yeah.
Like, of course, you don't know who these people are. Okay, well, whatever.
And it's like when you see Bob Saget show up and just be like, so foul, and it was like, mm-hmm. I had to suck somebody's dick for crack, you know. And it's like,
yeah,
oh my God,
yeah, it's
but
so,
and it's funny,
it's so funny. And I love just hearing about kind of this older era, right, of Vought, mm-hmm. of hero management, and how it was just like a party all the time. And,
yeah.
And I like, it was a different kind of celebrity, which obviously I think is very accurate to how celebrity is treated now versus back in the day or whatever. It's just different. It's just a different world and different mm-hmm. media and different social media and all these other elements that contribute to that. But he really, you know, he was living living high, the high life, literally, yeah. and financially and everything back in the day. And I love how that, because, yeah, I was like, who are they going to? Like, who would he be going to? And now it's like, oh, I love this character. I love how that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I also, from what IMDb has told me, is that this character was based on Stan Lee, and he is in the comics.
Oh, interesting.
As well. So he's a comic book character as well.
I mean, the name Legend, that is a very comic book feeling kind of name, you know?
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, is this a Stan Lee parallel?
Also, did you see the poster in the background that says, this means noir? It's no. Black noir.
Oh my god.
It made me laugh really hard.
Oh my god. Those are those little visual moments that I just love the show. Which, another thing, I know this is not just in the background or on the screen, but Sir Comes a Lot 779.
Oh god, yeah.
Seth Rogen's name. I just loved it. Well, any other shock and awe moments you want to mention?
I do want to mention, it was nice to see Almond Joy come back.
Yes. So good.
And to see how Huey laid out all the candy for Starlight. Yes. When he knew he had something in the white cloth, like, I have something to talk to you about. So here's your candy and here's your white cloth.
Just
like
chugging them. And the lavender bath bomb.
Yeah, I was like, oh God, I could relate.
I know. So
yeah, and just the whole Blue Hawk apology scene was like, mm-hmm. Exciting and coolest is maybe not like how I felt about it, but I did think that it was like a heavier, important moment, and mm-hmm. also like a shocking moment, because it was really sad to see that happen to A-Train's brother. So a good shock and awe, but not necessarily like a fun one.
Right. Yeah. It's not quite the Sir Comes a Lot moment, you know.
No, very different. But you got to have balance, right? Everything exactly. In moderation. And that's what makes you still leave the show feeling good and not super depressed.
Yeah. Well, and to think about in the last episode, one of, I think, the shock and awe moments was this Pepsi commercial, too. And yeah. to see these two things kind of paired with each other, like, this is the fantasy and mm-hmm. this is the reality of it, I think is totally. A really That's, nice yeah. parallel, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's choose our fighters. Who are you picking as your MVP and why?
I'm picking Butcher for this one because, yeah, I thought this was such a good episode for Butcher. I just loved seeing this character be so self-aware and really thoughtfully making choices, even if he knew that those choices were going to hurt, right? Mm-hmm. Or hurt those around him. And I mean, I love seeing him with Maeve. And I thought that Carl Urban delivered a great performance. There's a lot of good people in this episode, but I was I was really impressed with Butcher and how he was handled in this episode. And so, yeah, he's my MVP.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm going to pick, I want to give a shout out to Tomer Capone because he, you know, he just kills this episode, but I'm going to pick Jensen Ackles. Not just because I love him from Supernatural, although that is a big part. Like, I have been anxiously awaiting put together modern Soldier Boy, and it's really nice to see him actually step out of the shadows. I love the kind of pan down of his suit and his shield, mm-hmm. you know, feels very cinematic, you know. But I also really like this scene. Like, he feels so subdued. I feel like there's a lot of emotion there. And Jensen Ackles is a really good actor. Like, if you've never seen Supernatural, Yellow Fever is a really great episode to start with. And, I mean, there are a bunch of them. But that's one that I think really shows his comedic abilities and his emotional acting abilities. But, like, just how hurt he feels in this scene with Crimson Countess, but then how steely he feels elsewhere. Also, I love that he has a little bit of stubble. Like, he looks so fucking good. Like, yeah. Homelander has met his match in my heart and on the screen too. Like, I don't know which one of them I would pick. But yeah, so Jensen Ackles is getting mine for this episode. And let's move to predictions. What do you think might happen next? And what are you excited to see?
there's so many things that I legitimately don't know where they're going to go, but I am predicting that we're going to get more Soldier Boy. We're going to have some conversations, and somewhere down the line, I'm expecting a confrontation where Homelander becomes aware of Soldier Boy's existence. Like, that has to happen. I don't know what's going to happen when that happens, but it has to happen. I'm a little concerned about Frenchie and Kimiko. So I will be excited when they are both back together, because it makes me sad to think that she just thinks that he ghosted her. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. I don't know. I don't know how Huey and Starlight are going to come back together on this. And I'm really uncertain about where Maeve went. I am assuming that she is not actually dead, but I'm predicting that she's locked up somewhere, locked up in a tower, or although it would be funny if she was actually just in rehab and couldn't get out of some sort of like superhero rehab where she can't actually like fly or like leave or anything, a bubble, like biodome or something where she can't get out.
Wow, that would be a really interesting reality show, you know. Like soup rehab biodome.
Yeah, like some like soup intervention thing. And they're like, all right, you're in the biodome for 6 weeks.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably a lot of fodder for that in the soup world, you know.
Yes. If there's anything that we've learned, mm-hmm. the soups That's... like to indulge.
Oh, yes. They are fucked up. Yeah, and when nobody can tell you know, it turns out that creates some problems.
Yep.
Well, let's wrap up with some plugs. Rachel, where can we find you? What do you have coming up? And we just talked about Paul Reiser. How can listeners find that episode?
Yes. So Halloweenies, we are in alien country and just covered aliens. And next month, which would be March, we are covering Alien 3. Very excited to talk about that episode.
Charles Dance, man.
I have some thoughts, lots to unpack in that. So yeah, you can find all of that over on Bloody FM, the Halloweenies podcast. And yeah, I'm having such a blast covering those. So definitely check us out there.
Sweet. And you can find me at Jen Ferratu on social media places. Can find me coaching the Losers Club podcast and the Ladies Club and the Lady Killers podcast. And we just talked about Gretel and Hansel. And just planned out our next quarter of movies. So lots of really cool stuff coming up. I'm very excited about that. And you can find me co-hosting the White Ladies in Crisis podcast on this very pod feed. And we are about to cover The Woman in the Window and The Girl on the Train and the Kristen Bell woman watching from the mailbox / window Amazing. Down. Something like that. We're doing a whole series. I could not be more excited because this is very much like me love to talk about this shit. Sorry, that was a very Tarzan way of saying I'm excited for this. but you know what else I'm excited about, Rachel?
What?
We're here.
We're here.
We got here. Next week is going to be Herogasm. I cannot wait. This is my favorite episode. I hope I'm not overselling it. I don't know if I've built this up at all, you know, or talked about being excited, but I think this is the best episode of the series. So many things.
Yeah. What if you're like edging me on this episode?
What if you're like, I just wanted more, you know? I just don't get what they're doing with this. I cannot imagine that being your reaction. I think you're going to love it. And we're also going to have a guest with us, I believe. Mr. Mackenzie Gerber is going to join us again to talk about this episode. And yeah, that's it for this episode of The Girls on the Boys. We want to give a huge thank you to the Anatomy of Scream Pod Squad. And we are going to be back in 2 weeks to talk about Herogasm. And I'm prepping all my lotion. I got some fluffers in the wings. I'm very, very excited about this. But until then, remember, you guys, you are the real heroes.
Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad.